All right, so picture this. You're a law student, right? And you've got this appellate brief you're working on. You've been poring over the trial record, looking for, any kind of mistake, any error that could get the conviction overturned. And well, you've hit a wall.
You've come up empty.
Totally empty, no clear violations, no obvious missteps by the trial court.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you do now? It feels like a dead end, right?
Yeah, you've hit that point where you're like, is there actually anything here to appeal? Is this just a totally solid case?
Exactly. And that's the tricky situation we're going to dive into today. It's a unique procedure that pops up specifically in California when appointed appellate lawyers, well, they can't find any grounds for appeal.
Yeah, it's important to note right off the bat that this isn't like a universal thing. Different states and the federal courts, they all have their own ways of dealing with this kind of scenario. But what California came up with, it's really interesting. It's all thanks to a case we're going to unpack today.
And that case, my friend, is People v. Wenda, a 1979 decision from the California Supreme Court. You know, it might not be a household name like Miranda or Roe v. Wade.
Right, doesn't exactly have the same ring to it.
True. But in the world of criminal appeals in California, Wenda is a big deal. This case created something called the Wenda Brief Procedure, which is all about making sure the appeals process is fair, especially for folks who can't afford their own lawyer, indigent defendants.
Yeah, think of it as like a built-in safety net in the system, a way to double check that no one is wrongly imprisoned just because they couldn't afford a high-powered legal team.
100%. So before we get into the nitty-gritty of Wenda, let's take a step back and connect this to some of the bigger legal concepts we all learned in 1L. I mean, this case really boils down to the Sixth Amendment, right?
Yep, the right to counsel.
Right. Everyone has the right to a lawyer, not just during the trial, but also when they're appealing a conviction.
And that right to counsel, it's a pretty fundamental guarantee. It's about making sure that everyone, regardless of their income, has a fair shot at justice.
You got it. But here's the thing. What happens when that lawyer, the one appointed to handle the appeal, takes a good hard look at the case and says, "You know what? I just don't see any solid legal arguments here." Like, how do you balance the lawyer's professional judgment with the defendant's right to have their case reviewed by a higher court?
Because you can't force a lawyer to make arguments they genuinely believe are baseless. That would be unethical.
Totally. So this is where another Supreme Court case comes in, Anders v. California. This one's from 1967, and it's probably familiar to a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, Anders was a landmark case. It set the initial framework for how appointed counsel should handle appeals that they think have no legal merit. Like we said, you can't force a lawyer to make arguments they don't believe in, but the court still needed a way to ensure the defendant's rights were protected.
So under Anders, the lawyer had to do a few things. First, they had to really scrutinize the trial record. And then if they couldn't find any strong arguments, they had to tell the court, "Look, I don't see any meritorious issues here."
Right, and that's legal speak for. I don't think this appeal has any chance of winning.
Pretty much. But here's the catch. They couldn't just throw their hands up and walk away. The Anders decision said they still had to file a written legal argument pointing out anything in the record that could maybe possibly support an appeal.
Even if they personally thought those arguments were weak.
Exactly. It was like a way to give the appellate court something to work with, even when the lawyer themselves wasn't convinced.
The idea was to give the court enough information to make its own independent judgment about whether the appeal was truly frivolous or not.
Right. But as with a lot of legal stuff, the application of Anders, oh, it wasn't always smooth sailing. And in California, there was some friction developing between this federal framework from Anders and how the state courts were used to handling things.
Yeah, different jurisdictions often have their own little quirks and variations in how they interpret and apply the law.
Absolutely. And that tension is what brings us to Wenda's. So let's dive into the specifics. What was it about the Wenda case that sparked this major shift in California's approach to appeals?
Well, the case itself involved this guy, Ross Wenda. He was convicted of robbery with a firearm enhancement, which meant he was facing some serious time, 5 years in prison.
5 years? That's not a small potatoes kind of sentence.
Definitely not. And he was assigned an appellate lawyer to see if there were any grounds to challenge that conviction.
Makes sense. So what happened? Did his lawyer find any smoking gun issues, any blatant errors that could get the conviction tossed out?
Nope. That's where things get interesting. The lawyer went through the whole trial record,
Yeah.
transcripts, evidence, rulings, the whole nine yards, and came to the conclusion that there weren't any strong legal arguments to be made.
So basically, the lawyer is saying this conviction seems pretty solid.
Yeah, essentially. But now, instead of following the Anders approach exactly, Wenda's lawyer took a slightly different path.
This is where we get into that no issues brief idea, right?
Exactly. So instead of trying to come up with potential arguments and then shooting them down, Wenda's lawyer basically said, look, I've looked everywhere and I just don't see any arguable issues here.
But he still filed a brief, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. He filed a brief, but it was a different kind of brief. Mm. It didn't focus on legal arguments. Instead, it laid out the facts of the case, the charges, the trial proceedings, the verdict, the sentence, all the key details.
So kind of like a neutral summary of what happened?
Yeah, and importantly, the brief explicitly said that the lawyer had done a thorough review and couldn't find any legitimate grounds for appeal. The lawyer also made sure to tell Wenda's Lind, hey, you have the right to file your own brief if you think there's something I missed.
So it's like the lawyer was saying, I've done my due diligence, but here's everything for the court to see if they spot something I didn't.
Exactly. And you know what the Court of Appeal initially did? They reviewed the case based on what the lawyer had presented, and they basically said, yeah, we don't see any issues either. Case closed, right?
Seems logical enough. The defendant's own lawyer and the appeals court both agree there's nothing to appeal. But that's not where this story ends. The California Supreme Court decided to take a closer look, and that's where things got really interesting.
What's fascinating is why the Supreme Court decided to step in. They weren't just rubber stamping the lower court's decision. They specifically took up the case to address this conflict that was brewing between the Anders framework and this no-issues brief approach that was used in Wendy.
Like, they saw this as an opportunity to clarify things.
Exactly. It was a chance to say, okay, let's figure out how to handle the situation in a way that protects everyone's rights.
So what did they decide? What was the big takeaway from the Wendy decision?
The California Supreme Court ultimately said, look, this no-issues brief thing, it's not necessarily a bad idea, but we need to add a crucial step to make sure it's truly fair to the defendant.
Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat. What's the crucial step?
They said that whenever an appointed lawyer files one of these no-issues briefs saying they can't find any grounds for appeal, the appellate court has to do its own independent review of the entire case record.
Whoa, hold up. They can't just take the lawyer's word for it.
Exactly. They have to roll up their sleeves and dig into those trial transcripts, read through all the motions, examine all the evidence themselves. It's a pretty big responsibility.
I bet. And why did the court think this was so important? Why not just trust the lawyer's judgment?
It all comes down to protecting the rights of indigent defendants. You know, even the best lawyers are human. They can make mistakes. They might overlook something. And when someone's freedom is at stake, the court wanted to make sure that every possible legal avenue was explored.
So it's like having a backup system, a second set of eyes on the case, just to be absolutely sure nothing was missed.
Exactly. Think of it as a constitutional quality control check.
I love that. So let's make sure our listeners really understand this. How exactly does this Wendy procedure differ from what Anders laid out? What are the key differences?
Under Anders, if the lawyer thinks the appeal is totally frivolous, they can file an Anders brief, which basically says, here are some potential issues, but they're all weak, and then ask to withdraw from the case. The court then reviews everything and decides whether the appeal is indeed frivolous and if the lawyer can step down.
So what's different with Wenda in California?
In California with Wenda, the lawyer files a no issues brief summarizing the case and stating they haven't found any strong arguments, but they don't have to say the appeal is hopeless or ask to withdraw at that point. Instead, filing this no issues brief automatically triggers the appellate court's duty to do its own independent review. The lawyer stays on the case unless the court finds something promising during its review. And if they do find a potential issue, they might appoint a new lawyer to focus on that specific argument.
So it's less about the lawyer saying, this is a dead end, and more about signaling to the court, hey, I've done my best, but you guys need to double check just to be safe.
Precisely. It's that extra layer of security. The lawyer does the initial deep dive, but the court does a second independent review to make sure nothing slipped through the cracks.
Now, I know Wendy wasn't a unanimous decision. There was a dissenting opinion from Justice Clark. What were his concerns?
Justice Clark's main worry was about how much extra work this would create for the already busy appellate courts. He argued that if a competent lawyer has already gone through everything and said there's nothing there, the court shouldn't have to essentially redo all that work. He thought it would be a huge drain on resources.
So his concern was about practicality and efficiency.
Exactly. He felt the court should focus on the arguments presented by the parties, not on hunting for arguments that even the defendant's lawyer couldn't find.
But the majority in Wenday clearly felt that protecting the defendant's rights was the top priority.
Yeah, they emphasized that even skilled lawyers can miss things. And when someone's liberty is on the line, it's worth the extra effort to make absolutely sure the case was handled fairly.
So let's fast forward to today. How has the Wended decision shaped the way appeals work in California?
Well, Wended reviews are now a routine part of the process whenever a no-issues brief is filed. It's become the standard procedure. It means court staff and judges have to spend time carefully reviewing every criminal case where the appointed lawyer couldn't find any grounds for appeal.
It must be a lot of work for the courts.
It definitely is. But it shows how seriously California takes the right to appeal. They're committed to making sure no one is unjustly imprisoned, especially if they're relying on a court-appointed lawyer.
So to recap, the Wenda brief procedure means that in California, when an appointed appellate lawyer can't find any valid grounds for appeal, they file a brief summarizing the case, but without making specific legal arguments. This triggers a mandatory independent review by the appellate court itself, a key difference from the Anders framework where the lawyer might try to withdraw.
Yeah, and the big picture goal of Wenda is to safeguard the appellate rights of indigent defendants, ensuring their case gets a thorough review, even if their own lawyer doesn't see any basis for an appeal.
And it's important to remember Justice Clark's dissenting viewpoint. It highlights the tension between ensuring a fair process and the practical realities of a busy legal system. But the Wenda majority prioritized fairness and made it clear that no stone should be left unturned when someone's freedom is on the line.
Absolutely. Wenda shows how dedicated the California Supreme Court is to protecting the rights of those who are most vulnerable in the system.
So for all you future lawyers out there, think about what Wenda means for you. How does it change the responsibilities of both defense attorneys and appellate courts in California? What does it tell us about how the justice system tries to uphold due process for everyone, regardless of their financial situation?
And maybe even zoom out a bit. Think about the bigger picture. In a system that's often overloaded with cases and short on resources, how crucial are mechanisms like Wenda reviews to ensuring equal justice under the law? How do we balance efficiency with the fundamental right to a fair appeal, especially for those who depend on the system's protection? Wenda offers a really fascinating glimpse into how California is tackling that complex challenge.
It's a reminder that even when a case seems straightforward, there might be more to the story. And sometimes those hidden layers are the ones that really matter.
And that's what makes the law so intriguing, right? It's about more than just the surface. It's about digging deeper and making sure justice is served even in the most unexpected places.
Couldn't have said it better myself.